We have some wonderful racing action this weekend at NYRA with the Jazzle Stake on Saturday and the Busanda Stake on Sunday. But you can also bet that wonderful Pegasus World Cup card at Gulfstream using your NYRA Bets account. If you want to be new to NYRA Bets, you can sign up. $200 match deposit bonus using the promo code REWIND, REWIND. Terms and conditions do apply. Welcome to episode 74 of Red Board Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest, he was here last month, he's back again. It's Brian Natto of Fairgrounds Racecourse. Me and Brian had super fun podcast today. We had a couple differing opinions, which is always fun on the pod. We went over races 3, 5, 8, and 13. And some angles we talked about are why speed has been so good on the main track at Fairgrounds. When you don't like two short favorites in the same race, it's okay to take a swing with a double-digit horse that you feel should be 9-1 or less. And it's up to the listeners to break the tie. Did the number 10 Mandaloon in the LeCompte run bad as the 4-5 favorite? Or is he improving as we saw the buyer jump from an 82 to an 89? This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest. I had him on just last month. He's back again, Brian Natto from Fairgrounds Racing. Brian, how are you?
Yeah, Spencer, good to be back with you. Thanks so much. Things are going well here.
Super, super fun card over the weekend, 13 races. You always hear people say they want, you know, more horses in every field. But for me, I don't mind longer days as well. We're so used to Saratoga with those long, you know, 13 race day cards. It's nice to see one in the Fairgrounds as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of doing it once a month here. We had the LeCompte and then the Risen Star next month. And you're right, it's a fun day. It goes quickly. we had some guaranteed pools, a lot of pick fours, a couple pick fives. So, yeah, it really went well. The weather cooperated. The turf course was firm. We had the rails down. So we couldn't have asked for a better show.
It definitely was a great, beautiful day of racing. Overall, when you see the card and how you have pick fours and pick fives, for me, I always try to help with the beginning players and saying, don't worry so much on how many pick fours and pick fives are in there, because it's so hard to, you know, put races together where you have firm opinions, where you might have a solid pick three where you don't like the middle favorite, but you like two horses on the outside parts of the legs. How do you do it when you see a big field and it's a big card like this? Do you kind of, you know, focus more on doubles, pick threes, or are you more looking at the bigger sequences?
Well, I think the beauty of the big card, Spencer, is that there's just so much bang for your buck and you have so much opportunity to kind of weave your way through it and figure out what you like best. And you know, like you kind of alluded to, you're not going to sit there and attack an entire card and think you're just going to sweep a 13-race card. So I tend to navigate to the stakes races. I think, you know, me personally, you have a better feel. You know what. Maybe a little more what to expect. So I concentrated on that late pick five. I also did because I knew we would have a big pool. I mean, we guaranteed 100,000, and I was very confident that we would at least double that, and we ended up tripling it and then some. We got 323 in that late pick five. So I concentrated on that one. I thought the depth in the competition was good and early, and then I thought that I at least could narrow late. It didn't work, but that's how I played it. And I think, you know, like I said, you don't want to just think you're going to play every sequence possible. You have to maximize your opinion or what you think is the strongest opinion.
We always talk about Belmont Stakes Day, the late pick five, and how it's all graded stake races. For me, I occasionally like having, me and PTF did something on the late pick five at Gulfstream from Saturday, and it had a nice little 16,000 claimer on the end of it. Sometimes, you know, people just aren't that good at stake races. I tend to feel I'm not the best in stake races. I like those lower level claiming and maiden special weight events a lot more.
Yeah, I do think there's something to be said for that. I mean, because those are the races, you know, that can be chaotic. So on a non-stakes day, I agree with you on a get-out race where, you know, Naira, New York always would card back in the day. I'm talking years ago, but they'd always card a maiden race in the finale, like on turf where you get 10, 12 horses, and it's a real head-scratcher. So there is something to be said for that. You know, there's also something to be said for, you know, especially on a stakes day. Here we carded the LeCompte as the 13th and final, the kind of, you know, the coup de grace, so to speak, where it's the last race, the one everybody's waiting for. So it was, you know, I thought it was a good build to that on this past Saturday.
We'll kind of talk a little bit of bankroll now. You said you had mostly focused on the late pick five. Using percentages, was it like 80% going towards the late pick five and then the little action bets 20% throughout the rest of the card? Or how, on this type of day, would you kind of allocate your bankroll?
Yeah, it was definitely tiered towards that. You know, obviously I was working too, mm-hmm. so it was a lot easier to put that sequence together for me and then kind of set it aside and go on with my day. So, yeah, but even if I would say, Spencer, even if I was just a fan sitting at home and playing, it would have definitely, you know, 75-25 kind of thing. I might have dabbled a little bit on some early sequences, and maybe I would have taken a shot. We're going to talk about a race coming up that I did have a strong opinion. So I might have taken a shot with, you know, maybe a single and a few spreads. The beauty of the 50-cent base play is that if you do have a strong opinion, if you do have a single, you know, you can play it for some chaos in another race, have your single, and not have to spend too much in it.
Something I love about the Fairgrounds racetrack is how strong the training pool is. You have trainers like Tom Amos, Ron Fauché, Brad Cox, Steve Asbjornsen as your top four. Obviously, we had the top two kind of going back and forth earlier on in the card. How much for you do you upgrade horses when you see one of those top two or three horsemen in the standings? Is it more of just you kind of give them the extra benefit of the doubt that if they're off a layoff, yeah, they might be ready this time because these trainers are trying to win this training title?
I don't know if I upgrade more as I might just, you know, circle the horse a couple times as opposed to, you know, give it a second look kind of thing. I don't necessarily upgrade, but I'll say, oh, you know, Tom's got this horse. You better take note that it's Tom kind of thing. And as you mentioned, you know, Tom and Ron are top, and Steve Asmussen's right there at Bradcox. Joe Sharp is doing great work. Mike Stidham won this trainer's title. Was the last one to win it before Brad Cox. So, you know, I think you do have to take maybe give it a second look and say, especially Spencer, on big days like we had on Saturday, when the top barns are not only pointing to those kind of days, but they're typically going to have the best horses too.
We're now a couple months into the meet. Are there any angles or factors so far? Maybe, you know, speed holding up better on the turf than usual. Anything, you know, in the jockey or trainer standings where someone is standing out to you that you've seen so far with the meet?
Yeah, the turf has been tricky because, you know, the turf has had some give to it with the weather here, not only the rain, but it's been cold here as well. So it takes a little longer to come back around. But when the turf has been firm, it's definitely been speedy. I'm hesitant to use the B word bias because I think that's the most overused word in racing. But, you know, in speed kills in racing on the dirt, but you better be close on this main track. You don't want to come from too far out of it, especially sprinting. Our track announcer, John G. Dulick, had a great stat a little earlier in the meet. At one point, 75 dirt sprints had been run. 73 of them had been won by a horse, you know, within like a length at the eighth pole. So, you know, you're not going to make up a lot of ground. So I just, you know, I'm not saying I'm elevating horses with speed, but I would say conversely, I'm trying to steer away horses without a lot of early speed because it's just tough to get there.
I love a stat like that because you have so many players who, you know, oh, speed bias, et cetera, and they'll be just playing all these speed horses. Then as soon as one closer wins, there's no more bias. We have to start betting everything because the track is fair again. That's such a good stat because it's not, you know, 12 or 20 races. That's a lot of races to have a substantial number of 73 of 75. And what that tells me is if a horse is four or five lengths back, usually at the half mile pole, okay, that horse can be eliminated because now they're not going to be able to make up the ground enough. And I now, oh, look, I'm down to two or three horses in every race. And now I can really make a solid pick five ticket.
Yeah. And the other thing too, that's that is part A, and you're 100% right. Part B is that just racing in the era we live in, and we were going to talk about it these past stakes on Saturday. You handicap a race and you say, well, this horse has got speed. This horse has got speed. This horse, you know, there's four speed horses in here. there's going to be a duel up front, and then the gates open and three guys look to the left and one guy looks to the right. Are you going? No, I thought I was going. No, you're going. And nobody goes. And one guy clears off and they go 49 and change. And all of a sudden they're crawling on the lead. So you have to be very careful, because I just don't think races are necessarily playing out like maybe we once thought they would, when there's so much speed that it just seems like there's a lot of tugging and grabbing.
When you bring up something like that, something I do like to focus on with that is, okay, what jockeys, when that seems to happen, are still going? A perfect example for me is Kendrick Carmouche in New York. Whenever it seemed like there was three or four guys that were just, no, you go, he would just be like, okay, I'm going. And that's how he won so many races with Gargan over the winter, is a lot of the more inexperienced jockeys, I think, would just let him get a handhold. And you're never getting by him when he's two lengths in front at the eighth pole.
And that's the beauty of a guy like Kendrick Carmouche, and he's the perfect example, getting just quickly off topic, but at least you know what you're going to get from him, and that's mm-hmm. why he won a riding title in New York this year, and it's a great example, because you know you're going to get an aggressive ride. And here in New Orleans, Florent Giroux is not as hell-bent as Kendrick Carmouche, but Florent is just absolutely great at seizing control of a race and putting his horse on the front. And then he's also great at making the other jockeys, you know, hesitant to go with him. And then all of a sudden, you know, Flo is clear on a loose and lonely lead, or he's up front on a horse you didn't think would be that close. And, you know, he wins a lot of races for a lot of different reasons, but I think that's close, if not at the top of the list, because he does do a great job of being aggressive early and scaring off a lot of people at the same time.
Let's go ahead and jump into these races. First race we're going to talk about was from the Fairgrounds on Saturday. It's race number three. It was the 100K Duncan F. Kenner Stake, going 5.5 on the turf. I seem to struggle a lot with these turf sprints. What about you? Is it one of your, you know, more favorite surfaces and distances to go, or are you more, you know, regular, you know, 6-6 on the dirt?
Yeah, I'm definitely not a turf sprint guy. I'm with you. I tend to struggle with them as well. I've come around a little bit, but especially when they first started becoming in vogue, I typically would just hit the all ball and say, well, I'll hope for something. But yeah, I do think they are very they are tough races to get a feel of. And, you know, we're going to talk about this one for an obvious reason in a second. And I do tend to struggle with them a little bit, especially because typically there's so much speed in these turf sprints that you have to decipher, you know, is it going to come back? Who's the speed of the speed? How are these horses that have shown speed in the past going to fare now that they're facing better speed horses? So, yeah, it's definitely very tough.
When the tote board opened up, one horse that I was very much against was the number two Fast Boat. Went from 9-2 to 5-2, and just, he had kind of just been running the same figure for a while, those 91s. And then he went from a 104 to 97 to 91 to 90. And just four straight downward trajectory just makes me think this horse might be a little bit off form. And I was trying to find someone, and I kind of ended up more on the number 8, Arch Dust. He just had a very good record, 5-6 at the distance. He was 1-1 at Fairgrounds. He had kind of been improving with 89, 98 the last couple races. Santana on for Asmussen. Now, I've heard a lot of people say they don't like Santana so much in turf racing, and we'll kind of talk about that in a little bit. But another one I liked was also Ready for Prime Time for Brad Cox. Comes off of Linda, just runs a solid win first time out in the optional 40 N2X, and I think was ready for a prime spot in this listed stake.
Yeah, I concentrated on Arch Dust and Born Great. I felt, and I was with you with Fast Boat. I was against Fast Boat for all the reasons you mentioned. And then also, Joe Sharp took the blinkers off, and it kind of looked just a little desperate to me, or not maybe just trying to throw something at the wall and hope this horse wakes up, because he did look a little off form for me. So I was against him. I thought the pace was going to be very, very hot. And I was right, which is, you know, yay for me, but I was just way wrong in how it was going to play out. And ready for prime time. I just thought with Flo last time, I know he didn't go as fast as just might, but I thought with Flo being aboard and they wired last time and they were inside of just might, I just felt that the pace would be pretty pretty hellacious. And then you've got Real Money in there too that had flash speed too. So I definitely looked at this race like it could, if not fall apart late, Spencer, it could definitely tilt a little more to the stalkers.
For me, I was hoping to get 3-1 on Ready for Prime Time and Arch of Dust. I ended up getting 5-2 on Arch of Dust. I just tried to play a little two-horse Wind Dutch and hope that I would, you know, just get a little bit of action. And maybe, you know, if one of them wins, I'm up like, whatever, $2, $3 based on the ROI and just, you know, try and start the day off right. What about you? What did you do from wagering? Was it more past the race here and just hope for the get some going for the next few races?
No, I played the one Born Great because I did think he would be the one that would sit the stalking trip. I thought he was lightly raced and had a lot of upside. And I really did like the fact, you know, short turnarounds and short rests don't bother me in the least. And actually, I think it's a good sign, especially when a good horseman, a guy like Brendan Walsh, wheels a horse back. And this one was coming back off 10 days. Off a win 10 days ago. He wired that time, but that wasn't going to happen here. We knew that. And I thought he would sit the right kind of trip. I thought he had a lot of upside. And again, when a guy like Brendan, who's a good horseman, a patient horseman that does right by the horse, you know, he wheeled him back in 10 days. I viewed it as a very positive sign. So I used Born Great and I played him with Arch of Dust as well.
It's Born Great and Arch of Dust for Brian. It's Arch of Dust and Ready for Prime Time for me. Let's see who wins the Duncan F. Kenner right now.
They're off racing in the Duncan F. Kenner Stakes. Fast Boat broke sharp. Right there, Ready for Prime Time with on the outside, Just Might in the black cap, and Born Great holds the rail. It's Ready for Prime Time in the leading role. Ready for Prime Time by half length to Just Might. Born Great nestled in toward the rail. Fast Boat is running in fourth, joined out wide by Arch of Dust, who's looking to improve from fifth and four from these joint leaders. We trail back then to Real Money in the hot pink, and Maniwa has dropped back to last. The quarter in 22.19 seconds inside three furlongs to run. It's Just Might. So Just Might has taken a lead from Ready for Prime Time at the turn-in with a quarter of a mile to run. Fast Boat between horses. Looking to gain toward the inside is Born Great. Then comes Arch of Dust, who's still seven lengths in back of these joint leaders, but now deep in the final furlong and a half. And then on the outside, Real Money and Maniwa toward the rail. They come past the 16th. Just Might holding on to a slight advantage from Ready for Prime Time. And here's Maniwa, who descends on them. For me, Galmena, Maniwa.
And one we didn't talk about, the number 7, Maniwa, first time turf, gets the W, paying $27.60 with a 98 buyer. Just, this horse looked like he came out of a cannon at about the 16th foal.
That's the perfect way to look at it. You're absolutely right. He was a horse that, if you know, the way I played the race, could have easily been on my radar. And because I did think if it didn't fall apart, I thought the stalkers would take over from the speed, and that's exactly how it played out. But I couldn't make Maniwa, you know, in hindsight, at 12-1 with some class, with a positive race flow, at least the way I was thinking, I guess I could have used him as a saver. And Wayne Catalano's so sharp, and he's been having a very good meet with a select group of horses. In hindsight, maybe, sure, you could play him, but as you mentioned, he had never been on turf before, and these were a pretty sharp, seasoned group of turf sprinters. You know, we talked about Arch of Dust for Steve Asmussen, and he was so good winning last time with ease, and it looked like he had gotten back on track and back on the beam after, you know, he tried Vigor in New York, and it didn't really work out, but he was really flat under James Graham, and born great. Maybe he didn't just handle the rise. He tripped out and had nothing to offer. And then sure as you mentioned, there's Maniwa. I mean, Maniwa won at 12.8-1. He looked like he was about 1.2-1. I mean, he was just awesome winning for fun under Miguel Mena. He got the right kind of trip, but boy, he was really stunning, and it gives the Catman a lot of options going forward. We talked to him after the race, and he said the stable manager, Steve Leving, had wanted to get this horse on turf, and it was maybe like, okay, we knew that before the race, sure, but you know, I kind of just maybe thought he was in the race because there really was no place else to run Spencer, and that necessarily wasn't the case. He was into win, and he sure did, and he looked really good doing it.
The little bit of pedigree research I had done before the race, the sire is 11% turf routing, weighs usually 14-15% for the dirt, so I didn't really like so much the switch. The lone sib was 0-4 on the turf. It was interesting, though, after the race, this is now Will Take Charge's fastest buyer figure for a son, and it ended up being on the turf for Maniwa. So I guess something to look forward to going forward. I think that he will definitely take money out of this race, and I don't know if they put him in, you know, I know there's not many grade stakes for turf sprinters, but if you see them in the grade three or whatnot, that might be the time where he might be a little bit of an underlay and you have to go somewhere else.
Yeah, the only thing I'll counter with that, I don't necessarily disagree. The only thing I'll counter to that is, you know, these turf sprints, you're always going to get a crazy fast pace. So that could help Maniwa. The one thing I will mention, this is where I'm really kind of irritated with myself, is that I don't think pedigree is as big a deal in turf sprints as it is going longer, because they play more like dirt races, especially over firm turf courses. And it's kind of like you don't even have time in these races to figure out you're not bred to run on turf or anything. You know, they just go fast early, they close later. If they do, they do. They don't, they don't. I don't think pedigree is as big of a deal, but that still didn't really mean I should have made Maniwa. I think going longer, going two turns, we're going to talk about a turf race coming up. I think pedigree plays out more in those type of spots as opposed to these. But with that being said, even though I kind of handicapped the race correctly, Maniwa to me was still a reach.
Let's move on to race number 5 from Saturday at the Fairgrounds. It was a maiden special weight going 1 mile on the turf. It brings back a Red Bull Rewind tracker horse that in Lajana for Sherry DeVoe. Just a horse that I thought with that big 77 buyer figure and getting above even money was good enough for me in here. I was pretty much singled and hammering Lajana at what I thought was a great price.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Joe Christofek, my colleague, and I, we do every day here at Fairgrounds, we do a best bet, favorite against, and best long shot. And Lajana was my best bet on Saturday for all the reasons you mentioned. You know, I think she was in the 8-5 range at post time. And, you know, I kind of figured maybe 2-1 in a big field. You know, she was never going to be 4. So that's why I made her my best bet too. You know, we don't like to take too low hanging fruit, as we like to say here. So, you know, and then you look through the rest of this group and there were some decent horses that's not to beat up on the locals here, but she had definitely, as you alluded to, Spencer, tipped her hand at Aqueduct for a very good, Cherie DeVoe does a good job with young horses. They are always well meant. And the fact that Lajana was 22 on debut says maybe she wasn't that well meant that day. So the fact that she ran such a big number from the parking lot, she goes inside, she goes outside to inside. She's got that run behind her and meets a group of locals that really weren't, at least on paper, all that salty. I was with you 100% that she was going to be really heck to pay in here.
When you see a horse like that, you know it's going to be sub 2-1, you could make the big win bet, or you can try to like elevate the horse from, you know, only paying $6 and maybe put him in the exacta with another horse, and then it turns into a 14-1 shot. Are you more of someone that will use a horse underneath, or are you more of like a single move on big win bet type?
Yeah, no, I'm those days are gone. I'm really only paying pick 5s and maybe pick 4. So she was the perfect storm here, Spencer, because she's your anchor. You know, she's your anchor to end the early pick 5, to end the first pick 4 that we offered. She's also in our middle pick, well, our second pick 4, I should say, that kicked off in race 4. So she was the perfect anchor because, you know, we could do a whole different show on horizontal ticket construction. But obviously, you knew and I knew we weren't getting fours on her. on this morning line. So that's how you take advantage of her as an anchor. She's your single, turn the pick five into a pick four, turn the pick four into a pick three, because you've got to maximize, you know, the bang for your buck. You kind of knew maybe you wouldn't be able to make a win bet on her. So there she is as the single and allows us to spread. And that's how maybe, Spencer, you come up with a Manny Wah. You know, you say, well, I got a single at the end. I don't like this turf sprint. I'll just buy the race and hope for some chaos. And, you know, that's how you can unearth horses that maybe you would have never come up with in the first place, because you've got a single at the end and allows for more coverage elsewhere.
The hard thing for me is I didn't really like anything in race four. Didn't really like anything in race six or seven to kind of play the doubles and pick threes. I didn't really have enough money to play the pick fours and pick fives throughout the day. So I had to find a horse that I wanted to play underneath. That one for me is Love in the Air. First time turf, but I know how good Mark Cassie can be with these types. Constitution is one of the best sires. I think it's like the third year he's been as a sire. And 16% turf route for him so far is a really, really strong number. I was getting what I thought would be a decent price at 9-2. I looked at the exacta probables. I said, okay, I'm just going to play LaJana to win. I'm going to play a very strong exacta with LaJana on top, and Love is in the Air underneath as well.
Yeah, I mean, Mark has already won with a turf two-year-old at the time, now three-year-old at the meet, a ground-saving post here. You've got the experience of the Tapita up at Woodbine that this horse had run well twice on. And I know it's not the end-all, be-all to say if they run well on a synthetic, they're going to handle the turf, but I don't ever think it's a bad thing. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you. Had route experience as well. Love in the Air, to me, was definitely one of the few, if any, upset possibilities.
For me and Brian, it's LaJana. I was trying to use Love in the Air to get some better price. You just had her singled. Let's see who wins the maiden special weight right now.
And Veroff, nice line out. Love in the Air, LaJana going out toward the lead. Laugh It Off, here's Walk Me Home, who's up and after the front for Mitchell Morrowland. Slants over while clear, Walk Me Home leads Hannah Road, who's now open to second. Favorite LaJana, third toward the rail, as Walk Me Home leads them out to the stretch. Sneaky and Office Party floated wide as they go to the back of the course. It's Walk Me Home who dictates the field from Hannah Road. LaJana, third at the inside. Office Party is posted wide, fourth, and looking to gain at the 5.5. Sneaky running in fifth. Love in the Air settled sixth. Laugh It Off is seventh. Let's Skedaddle in eighth. Go Big Green is ninth, close to the near side. We're racing two clear from Cindy Lou Who. Then posted wide is Reminiscent. The See the Stars filly, Transient, looks to gain toward the inside, running in 12th. Strike of Honor's 13th, and Pink Channel's 14th. The quarter was 23.96 seconds. Half mile in 48.63. They round the far turn. It's still Walk Me Home from Hannah Road, the Jana. Office Party, 4th. Love in the Air, Sneaky being driven. So too, Let's Skedaddle wide. Laughing Off, Go Big Green. Reminiscent, Transient, picking up between horses. Cindy Lou Who, Strike of Honor, Pink Channel, as he's made in three-row fillies. Straight and past the quarter pole. Three quarters, 112.56. It's Walk Me Home, the Jana rallies up the rail. Hannah Road, Love in the Air, Office Party as they fan across the course. But now they're deep in the final furlong. And with the rail, it's LaJana. Here's Love in the Air and Office Party on the outside with Brian Hernandez Jr., the hard-spun filly. LaJana out to the maiden ranks at second asking. Love in the Air was the place horse. Office Party third. And then Hannah Road on the wire along with Go Big Green as they battled it out for the minors.
And the number two, LaJana, gets it done, paying $5.40 with an 80 buyer. Love is in the Air runs second, so I hit my exacta. Everyone seems to have won this race, Brian. This is why I listen to Red Board Rewind, because you can find a solid-priced horse a couple weeks later down the road.
Yeah, I mean, she ran very, very well. She looks like a nice prospect, as I mentioned, for Cherie DeVoe. It'll be interesting to see where she goes from here. But she sat the right kind of trip that you want on the turf, saving ground inside. Kicked late, and she definitely looks like a horse. You know, it's tricky with these kinds of horses now. Are you going to get an allowance race to fill? Where do they go from here? But she definitely looks like she's got some upside and talent for a barn that does very well, like I said, with these lightly raced, these younger horses.
I will say this, watching down the stretch, it just seemed like the seas opened up and everyone wanted to be in the nine path, and she was like, I'll take the shortest way to the finish line. That's no problem.
Yeah, Brian Hernandez rode a great race. He saved all the ground. He figured, you know, the leaders would tire. It would be there when it, when that they would drift maybe and open up, and that's exactly how it played out. And you know, it's, you run the danger on that trip on the turf of kind of looking like a fool, but more often than not, if you can wait and wait and wait, that you will get your seam, and that's what happened there. And he rode a very confident, polished race.
For some people, maybe $12.90 for a dollar exact isn't good. I mean, for me, I had a nice little win bet on her, and then I turned her into pretty much a 12-1 shot there along with that. And it just seemed like when you have an idea, and my idea was that the one would improve on the turf and did with a 77 buyer, new buyer top. That's how it was a short exacta, but that's how you can, you know, make money in a race where, like you said, it anchors a bunch of different pick fours and pick fives, but I hadn't really done so well in the beginning of the card, and I had saved some money, and this was kind of my, not quote-unquote get-out race, but a race that I had a much better, higher opinion on, and I just wanted to be able to crush it.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do, because, you know, these races on these big cards, like we talked about at the start, if you can't have strong opinions in every race, and that you're going to lose money if you think you do, so you have to fire when you do. And, you know, you mentioned, well, some people might not be all hot and bothered by a $12.90 exacta. But if you, A, if you take a big swing at it, and but B, you know, if that's the only exacta you played, that's great. And when you have a heavy favorite, these, I don't play exactas, but if you have a heavy favorite, the one thing I think that the newcomer or the, you know, inexperienced bettor does that is really silly to me is that they say, okay, this, I know this horse Lejeune is going to win, but I don't know who's going to run second. So they make, you know, let's just say they, on a $100 base bet, they make $520 exactas. Well, that's just not a good bet, because mm-hmm. even if you hit it, you're throwing $80 away. So you just need to be, you know, man or woman enough to say, listen, this is my one exacta. It's Lejeune over Love in the Air, and I'm going to play it 50 times or whatever your bet is, you know, and not waste money on others, because then again, even if you hit it, then it really, really makes that $12.90 exacta look silly. And that's not going to help you at all, because if you played, you know, if you played four others at the same increment, then it makes, you know, $12.90 is really like, you know, $6.90. So you have to just punch it one time. If you're wrong, you're wrong. But by punching it straight one time aggressively, at least you get the most out of your opinion.
Let's move on to race number 8. It was an optional at 50,000 and 1X going 101 16 miles on the dirt. I had some reservations on the favorite. I ended up finding a longer shot on the board. What about you, Brian?
I you know, I wasn't in love with this race. I wasn't sold. I guess it was Gagetown. Looking at the chart here, okay, Angor ended up going off the favorite. I didn't love him. I didn't love Gagetown either. I'm looking at my picks now. You know, I did TV this race, so I made picks. I had it 9-2-10. But I remember now that staying up late opened up the tote at 9-1. So I was kind of like, well, he's not going to win, you know, for mm-hmm. Steve Asmussen. Sean Bridgmahan was riding for Ricardo Santana, who wasn't here. First Lasix, strong. I felt strong Kentucky form. So when I looked up and saw him at nines, I said, well, that's not happening. But admittedly, Spencer, I didn't have a super strong opinion. I was kind of with you. I was against Angor. I was against Gagetown. And I thought that there was a lot of speed in this race, especially with Manor House and Beep Beep coming out of the LeCompte to run here. It was another reason why I liked staying out late, who I felt could settle off the speed like he did in his route race in Kentucky. I just felt like this was a race that was likely to tilt here to come from off the pace a little bit.
Now getting back into the two favorites I didn't really like, Gagetown for Brad Cox, to me was just one that ran well last time out, but I just didn't think the stretch out would do well. Not one really big on Tomlinson's, but 208 is a very low number when you kind of look at those distance ones. You usually see 350s, 340s, something like that. So to see a 208, I was very nervous on the stretch out. And Gore from the rail position, Philip Bauer, not good off the layoff. I said, okay, let me go into formulator and see what's going on. 1-for-24 when last time out in the money, 31-60 days on dirt routes. So when you have that kind of stat and this horse goes off, you know, at 5-2, that's a play against for me. So now I'm like, okay, I don't really like the race. Let me try and find something. And it's kind of like the perfect storm. Earlier in the day, I was playing with Sabrina. She found a 46-1. She bet to win. It still had hit the board. And I just remember kicking myself saying, why didn't we play this horse across the board? So now I find a horse like Right and Just, who, coming off of a maiden win, had a 78 buyer, was right around the two favorites I did not like, and was working lights out for Shane Wilson. And I just said, let me look up his trainer stats. 5-24, first off of a claim in a dirt route with some big, big workouts. I thought this colt was well meant. And I said, I'm just going to put two across the board. And what helped that as well was having the money, playing with the track money from the Lajana and the Exacta earlier on in the card.
Yeah, I mean, the price is right on Right and Just. As you mentioned, he ran a big number last time for Louis Roussel, and Shane does a good job off the claim. Mitchell Morrill was here. The figure was fast. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's the whole the whole crux of this game is getting the best of it. And, you know, Right and Just at a huge number was just that, at 22-1. And, you know, I certainly didn't like him at all. I just felt that there was so much speed in this race that anybody that wanted to be involved early was definitely not going to get and be involved late. But this is what I talked about earlier. That's all fine and dandy, and then they open the gates, and then things are a little different.
For, you know, I'm taking it was more of a pass race for you, as for me, I was just playing the horse Right and just across the board.
Yeah, I was waiting for the late pick five, so I didn't have a play here. And admittedly, I know some people, when, you know, they see a lack of toed action, don't care. That's, you know, fine with them. Just to see, like I said, to see staying out late, open at 9. And when Joe Kay and I were still on TV doing this, he was at 7. And it was just like, well, this isn't happening to me. I mean, there was no reason. To me, the horse was more apt to be 5-2 than he was to be 9-1. So I just said, well, that's not happening. And the race wasn't within anything that I was involved in. And like I said, the late big pick five was looming. So I just said, you know what, I'll just study my notes and get all my T's crossed and I's dotted for that sequence.
Let's see if I can get lucky with Right and Just right now in the 8th.
Right and Just strides out to the lead. Good first. Toward the inside, there's Gagetown, purple with the gold sleeves, taken back, and AC Expressway is close up. It's Right and Just who leads them into the clubhouse turn. Right and Just leads here from AC Expressway. Gagetown third toward the rail, with Manor House fourth and only 3 from the lead at the 6.5. That's a break of a length and a half to Anchor, taken back at the inside and joined out wide by Good First as they go up the back of the track. Beep, beep. The Eaton Blue with the brown belt is next, followed by Cousin Larry. Ghost Lighter in the royal blue of Godolphin, and Very Rank, staying out late, needs to settle for Sean Bridgemahan, has dropped back to 10th and last. The quarter in 24.43 seconds, but now they're at the 4.5. It's Right and Just. AC Expressway is right there prompting that. Gagetown is handy in third. Manor House fourth. Anchor is fifth. Good First in sixth. Then Beep Beep in seventh. Cousin Larry from Ghost Lighter and staying out late remains last. Half mile in 48.82 seconds. They round the far turn. Right and Just. AC Expressway right there on the outside. Right and Just by a half length. AC Expressway has been close up for Miguel Mena, followed by Gagetown, who's been pulled to the 3 path. Manor House under pressure. Cousin Larry gets a rail run as these three-year-olds turn for home. 3/4 in 113.09 with Mitchell Morrill. It's Right and Just looking to finish when he started. Right and Just has built a 6-length lead in the last from Gagetown and Cousin Larry. They battle it out for second and third. Beep Beep and Ghost Slider, but past the 16th, it's Right and Just. Right and Just strikes at 22-1.
And Right and Just gets it done, paying 46.20 with an 80 buyer on the front end. We were just talking about it off air, how shocked I was that he got that clear lead and winning by 3 in a race where I was a little bit suspect on the favorites. And, you know, Gagetown ran well to run second, but Angor was just not good at all coming off those layoffs.
Yeah, this is the type of race where, you know, handicappers are jumping off the roof. It made no sense whatsoever. I mean, how does All right, if you told me Wright and Just was going to clear on the lead, I would have said it. So he went 46-4, but then you say, wait, he went 48-4, mm-hmm. and he was walking on the lead. And you look at Manor House, you know, on a one-turn mile at Laurel, beep, beep, 46-1, pressing last time at Churchill. AC Expressway wired 6.5 last time, and he's inside Wright and Just. Here's Encore as well, and outside good first press last time, and it was just, to me, completely implausible. And there's our leading jockey, Mitchell Merle, at 22-1 freewheeling on the lead. So a great job from him for taking the initiative when no one else, for whatever reason, didn't go. And that's what, you know, makes this game so, A, hard, but B, frustrating as hell when you're like, well, what? This makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, Joe and I watched this race upstairs on the set, and we were like, how is this horse? No one's running at all. And sure as heck, no one did. And you know, 22-1, pulling clear late. A great job by Shane Wilson. You mentioned the stats. A great job by Mitchell Morrill. And you know, a horse that's getting pretty good at the right time. And we thought this was a loaded, Spencer, a loaded allowance. Mm-hmm. I said the top two or three finishers will be right back in our Risen Star next month. So, I said that before the race. So that's how highly regarded I felt this race was. But at the end of the day, nobody did any running at all except the winner.
And I think I'm happy you brought that up too. You know, how rare is it that A, we see the late jockey change, but Mitchell Merlis being the leading jockey now jumps on. You get 22-1. You never see that on IRAD or, you know, Tyler when they're running down at Gulfstream. It's just those horses automatically almost get cut in half just by connections. So I think the main thing for me was not only was it just coming out of the other barn, but it was the workouts with the good stat and the jockey change. It's kind of just, I have money, I'm up for the day, I don't like anything in this race, but if I let a 22-1 shot do exactly what happened and win, or, you know, at least hit the board, you know, 780 to show isn't bad. If you have a little show bet there, you're making 3 extra money, 1480 to place. I bet across the board because I had. If I had lost that exact in that Lejana bet, I probably wouldn't even have touched this race. So it's kind of getting lucky early to be able to have the money to play this type of race the way I wanted to.
Yeah, and when your horse is 22-1, you're allowed to do that. It's, you know, but when it's Gagetown at 3-1, trying something different, it's you know, a lot different scenario. So yeah, you always should take your shot at a nice price as opposed to, you know, a horse like Encore at 5-2 is like, well, you can't bet that horse in this kind of race. So it's all about risk reward, and certainly Wright and Just, whether he got a dream scenario, an unlikely scenario or not, at 22-1, you're allowed to take a shot with that type of situation.
Let's talk about the race. Everyone was super excited to see. Race number 13 from the Fairgrounds was the Grade 3 Lecomte, going 1/116 miles on the dirt. Overall, the field, everyone complains, you know, oh, maybe this field isn't that strong. I thought it was the perfect amount of interesting, you know, you go a bunch of different ways in this race.
I thought it was a very good race, Spencer, for a graded 3-year-old stakes on January 16th. I thought you couldn't get a better field. I thought there was upside. There was proven accomplished runners like Midnight Bourbon. There was horses with a world of upside and talent like Mandaloon, exciting newcomers like Santa Cruiser, a proven kind of stakes horse in Arabian Prince, even a lightly raced horse that had won over the track a couple times in Proxy. So, yeah, I thought this was really a really, really good renewal of the Lecomte, especially at this time on the racing calendar.
For me, I had a really hard time in this race. Midnight Bourbon, good price at 7-2. I just went with Arabian Prince. I thought improving every race, like you had said, he had the two stake races. He was at least grade 2 stake placed at 13-1, which would be a great price. And just for me, would have to come out of the back of it. And, you know, have to show, I was hoping to show a little bit more speed, but Brian Hernandez, Dallas Stewart, not the best in the grade stake category, but he always seems to hit with one in the 3-year-old trials.
Yeah, he was definitely a horse I was, excuse me, really set against in the Lecomte, because okay. I I don't want to say they didn't care about winning. That's silly to say. But I, certainly Arabian Prince wasn't going to be anywhere remotely close to his best on January 16th. Dallas is a progression type of guy. You think of Commanding Curve. You think of Golden Soul. Dallas is a guy that wants to get him going and start a season and then get him going in our Derby here at Fairgrounds and certainly the Kentucky Derby. So I was definitely against Arabian Prince. I figured he'd rally for a share and we'll see better. But I was drinking the Mandaloon Kool-Aid. I just thought I thought he did want to win, Spencer, because it was the acid test. It was his first graded stakes race. I don't want to say he needed points. That's not that's not the case. They all need points. But I just felt like it was his time and he was in there to win maybe a horse like Midnight Bourbon, a little bit like Arabian Prince, a starting off to a campaign. He was proven in graded stakes races. So sure, he didn't necessarily, they certainly wouldn't have complained about winning. I just thought maybe on the day, a horse like Mandaloon was a little more cranked than a few of the others, at least on Saturday, January 16th.
What did you end up doing from a betting standpoint here, Brian?
I was single to Mandaloon. If no other, if the highlight of my day was that I didn't need to bet this race because I was already out after Sunpath bombed in race 12, and I wasn't betting Mandaloon at 4-5. So it was a sit on my hands to keep them warm on a chilly day and fight another day.
For me, it was Arabian Prince. Let's see who gets some points here in the Grade 3 LeCompte right now.
And they're off in the 2021 LeCompte Stakes. And there's Proxy with Midnight Bourbon, and Mandaloon is up and after the lead. It's Midnight Bourbon. So Midnight Bourbon just leads them for Joe Talamo. Proxy in the Godolphin Blue, and Mandaloon is stacked three wide as they enter the clubhouse turn. Arabian Prince up the inside trail. Regular Guy running in fifth with on the outside. Game Day Play in sixth as they go to the back of the track. Then comes Red and Wild, and dropping back to last is Santa Cruiser, the opening quarter in 24.68 seconds, with just inside six furlongs to run. And the leader is Midnight Bourbon, who controls the pace here for Joe Talamo. Midnight Bourbon leads Proxy by two. Mandaloon, third on the outside, with Saving Ground Arabian Prince. Regular Guy is five from the leader in fifth, followed by Game Day Play, who's running a wide sixth. And then comes Red and Wild, and Santa Cruiser remains last of the eight. They go past the half-mile pole here in the LeCompte in 48.99 seconds. It's Midnight Bourbon, who leads Proxy and Mandaloon right there on the outside with three furlongs to go. It's Midnight Bourbon. Mitchell Morrill makes a move with Proxy between horses. Florent Giroux and Mandaloon, green with a pink sash, being driven now to engage Proxy and Midnight Bourbon. Then Regular Guy and Arabian Prince. They straighten past the quarter pole. Top of the stretch, three quarters. 1 minute 13.57 seconds against the rail. It's Midnight Bourbon. Midnight Bourbon leads them into the final furlong. Leads by three. Mandaloon and Proxy, they battle it out. It's still Midnight Bourbon. Past the 16th, Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Mandaloon, Gamely. Here it is for Midnight Bourbon. Wins the LeCompte, holds Proxy and Mandaloon.
And the number one, Midnight Bourbon, gets it done. A solid 940 win mutual with a 91 buyer. One that I'm very excited to look forward to going ahead. Arabian Prince off the board, but like you had said now, maybe one that, you know, maybe not the next prep, but the prep after where he'll be ready to fire.
Yeah, it was a weird race, Spencer. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Kudos to Joe Talamo for catching the Midnight Bourbon ride and being aggressive when a race where, I mean, Joe Kay and I talked to Keith DeSormo after the race, who trained Santa Cruiser, and Santa Cruiser went 45-1 dueling in his maiden race at Churchill Downs, and he is out the back last. And it's like, what is happening here? So kudos to Joe Talamo for realizing, for whatever reason, nobody felt like going, and they ran the LeCompte on the dirt. But if you look closely, it might have been on the turf, I think, because they crawled early and sprinted late, and Midnight Bourbon, under a very, very sharp ride, had plenty left in a merry-go-round race, Spencer, an absolute merry-go-round race. The horses that were 1, 2, 3 at the pace call were 1, 2, 3 under the line. And I left the LeCompte knowing less than I went going into the LeCompte.
Second place horse, number 4, Proxy, Mitchell Morrill, coming in again with another solid almost 9-1 shot hitting the board. I think it's going to be something for me looking forward when I see Fairgrounds on a certain day that I play, looking for Mitchell Morrow and just seeing, you know, if he does end up, you know, having more 6, 10, 15-1 shots like that, because he can really make your day.
Yeah, I mean, he's our leading jockey for a reason, and he's been very in tune to how races are run, and he sensed that there wasn't any pace in here, and he put Proxy up close, and Proxy was a horse. Mike Stidham was over the moon after this race, when I talked to him, because Proxy was a horse that, you know, was getting the acid test today, and Mike said, you know, we needed to find out if he could move on, and he certainly showed he could, and he deserves to, because he came back and he nipped Mandaloon late for the place. You know, Mandaloon, I don't know. I don't want to say he was exposed. I loved him going into this race. I expected a breakthrough, kind of a seminal performance, and he was, I don't know, he stunk to me, to be honest with you. I did not think he was very good at all. Brad said he's going to put blinkers. He's likely going to put blinkers on for the Risen Star, his next race. I just felt that if he was the type of horse I thought he was, that three wide stalking trip was ideal. And he just offered nothing. So, you know, he still ran third in his graded stakes in 2-turn debut. So maybe I'm being a little harsh on him, but I thought he would offer more. So, I think going, you know, in the Risen Star, me personally will be treading very, very lightly with him. Maybe the blinkers are going to wake him up. I don't know. Now, I don't want to poo-poo Midnight Bourbon either, because I think that, now I said this to Joe, I said the fact he won in a spot where, like I said, I didn't really think they were all hell-bent on winning, the fact he won like that and he won decisively says you better look out for Midnight Bourbon, because I think he'll only get better going forward off that return run. And I think he's definitely, at least right now, and not that other horses can't get better, but they better put their running shoes on to beat him down the road here at Fairgrounds.
I will say this just as a counterpoint for Mandaloon. Went from a 82 to an 89, so did improve, just didn't improve as much as horses like Midnight Bourbon and Proxy. So maybe, I know 4-5 just sucks to lose at, but maybe it was more of the public overbetting that type of horse, where maybe it should have been more of, you know, 8-5, and there should have been a much closer contingent. But, I mean, the top three finished, you know, well clear of the rest. Definitely something to look forward to. Like you had said, maybe some weren't trying to win today. Maybe the next Fairground stake race will be trying to figure out what the three-year-olds would be, looking for that chipper coming in, looking for those points.
Yeah, and I think you alluded to something that we've talked about a little bit, some of the people here off the air, and that if Mandaloon wasn't wearing the green and pink of Judd Mott and wasn't trained by Brad Cox, he would have been 3-1 in this race, and he would have been one of those horses. You know, this horse isn't bad. He could win this race for sure, but maybe I was guilty of drinking the Kool-Aid. And you did say, and you're 100% right, and I think maybe I'm being too hard on him too. He did improve. He did improve his figure, and he is moving forward. So we'll see. I think he needs to be better next time, and maybe he will be. They did throw a lot at him, and it's not like he totally bombed in here. So I'm probably being a little hard on him. Before we go, I do want to mention Santa Cruiser, though, because I don't know why he was out the back and last, but if you watch the race again, he's the only horse that made up an inch of ground, and he was running on hard at the end. It was the absolute definition of the most insignificant fourth you'll see in a race all year, but he was running on at the end. I think he's very interesting going forward for Keith DeSormo. And I think he's a horse that showed a lot of talent, and he was taken way out of his game in this race. And he still ran very, very well. Don't sleep on this horse at you know, what's going to be a big number going forward.
That is all the time we have for today. Brian has to go do more Fairgrounds racing, as they are racing today on Martin Luther King Day. I'm about to go watch my Knicks play the Orlando Magic. Where can people find you on social media, Brian, where you still are laying out that 90% of the horse racing picks?
Yeah, it's Brian_J_Natto. So I'm on Twitter. Joe K is here as well on Twitter. John G. Dooley, the three of us kind of manning the mics here at Fairgrounds. So, yeah, we've got a cool nine-race card today on Martin Luther King, the holiday, and really looking forward to that. And we'll be back to battle Thursday as well. And, yeah, the racing's been great. I think we've got a lot of really talented horses. There's a good three-year-old filly allowance race today that will funnel some horses to our Rachel Alexandra. Our next big day, Spencer, is February 13th. That's the Risen Star Day, Louisiana Derby preview day. So we'll have a huge stakes card that day, guaranteed pools again, just like we did the other day.
Super excited for it. Thanks for coming on and taking the time on a day when you're already going to work. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Spencer. It's a pleasure anytime you want me.
We're going to take 1 week off from the Barry Meadow tips from his book, The Skeptical Handicapper, available at TR Publishing or Amazon. But let me know if you guys want them every single week. I'm trying to make it, you know, maybe two or three times a month, have that 1 week off. Let me know in the comments. Let me know at Handicapper on Twitter. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Forentel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl, and we will see you next time. Nowhere to hide from all of this.